Welcome to Put a Shrimp on It.
All of Jason's suggestions for an episode gag this evening were so dirty they drove me nuts.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
So, this is the first Barbie movie that was ever animated in computer-generated animation.
Is it actually?
That, yeah.
Okay.
It's billed as her first movie on the cover of the VHS case.
Should we say which movie it is, or do people already know from the title of this episode?
Well, Jason, I would think they would.
Should
yes.
we introduce ourselves, maybe?
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jason.
Hi, I'm Mina.
And this is Put a Shrimp on It, a podcast where we talk about Barbie movies. And we're doing The Nutcracker first. And go on, Mina, what were you saying?
Yeah, so on the VHS cover, it says, starring in her first movie, Barbie. And then, like, you know, subtitle. It should be, it says Barbie in The Nutcracker, but it just says Barbie and then also Nutcracker. Like, it doesn't. It doesn't say in The Nutcracker anywhere on the VHS case.
What about non-VHS copies?
I never owned it on DVD. I wouldn't know.
I owned it on DVD. Or was it CD? I don't remember. How old is my copy?
Well, you would have... Oh, geez. It could have been on a CD-ROM, I guess.
It could have been. I mean...
But it wouldn't have
been. I don't have it anymore. I rented it.
It would have been on DVD. It would have been on DVD.
Anyway, so The Nutcracker. Should we just get right into it? Or do you have more stuff to talk about the VHS release?
All I know about the VHS release was that I watched that movie, like, oh my goodness, so many times. So many times. I'm surprised that, like, the tape never got worn down. You know what I mean? Like, I watched that movie, oh my goodness, so many times.
So, The Nutcracker, I have a lot of notes for it. And what I tried to do here, I tried to use, like, a red pen, like a red ink.
Okay.
But... the pen itself was almost completely dry. So the first four words are like in a really like scratched red hue. And then everything else is like normal.
It's not pink. It's lightish red.
Are you referencing Blood Orange or something else?
No, I'm referencing Red versus Blue.
I haven't watched that.
Oh, it's by the same people who make Ruby. So.
Why do you like it so much? It sounds bad.
What, Ruby or Red versus Blue?
Red versus Blue.
I mean, I watched it when I was, like, really young. Like, probably younger than I should have been when I was watching it. Yeah, I watched it when I was, like, 12.
I remember the first season was really rude. I didn't like it.
Yeah. The first season is a little shaky, but, I mean, it gets a lot better later on.
I think we're getting derailed.
We are, a little bit, yeah.
Anyway, so.
So Barbie and the Nutcracker has a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Yeah, it has a 20% and it has a 58% audience score.
On audience reviews?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like that's a bit unfair.
I also feel like it's a bit unfair.
Because it's a pretty decent movie. I mean, it's nothing great.
Like, it
but
came
it's...
out in 2001. What do they want?
Yeah. Like, can you think of something else that came out in 2001 that was as good?
And especially because, like, that was the Barbie animation team's, like, first movie, right?
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Like, well, okay, like again, first 3D movie. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a pretty good it's a pretty good go of it for a first movie.
I agree. Yeah. Oh, I will say the intro is terrifying.
Do you mean with, like, oh, the fairies? Yeah, the fairies are a little, that does color your interpretation if you get really freaked out by those fairy children.
I feel like that's why that 20% is there.
Yeah.
It's like, it used to be 60 or 70 and then the fairies dropped it down to 20.
Yeah. Yeah, the little fairy children are kind of the closest we got in this movie to, like, an animal sidekick.
Yeah.
And
unless we count the bat.
The bat was Tim Curry, Mouse King's sidekick, not Barbie's.
I mean, it's still an animal sidekick,
isn't
it?
Okay, that's true.
What about Marzipan?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Marzipan. I'm kind of an idiot.
Yeah, I did as well. Anyway, we'll get... Okay, back to the intro so we can actually do this in order and not, like, do this completely wrong. So basically, the movie starts with a couple of extremely terrifying fairies flying around the screen for, like, a full, like, 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, there's, like, a very, like, okay, well, yeah, so the movie starts with, like, a very prolonged, like, sight gag animation sequence of these two fairies, yeah.
And they fly in the screen, like, towards the viewer.
Yeah.
And it's really creepy, and they greet you with a very creepy, like, unblinking faces, yeah. And, like, plastered smiles, and it feels like they are going to kill you.
Like, okay, in 2001, cute animation. In 2019, mm-hmm. not so much.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it hasn't aged well.
Yeah.
And also, these two characters are very strangely recurring in the entire movie.
I think that what must have happened was the little fairy children were probably supposed to be like toy sale fodder. You know what I mean?
Were they?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, so forget about that. But seriously, the fairies are really creepy. They come back to like move the plot in like different moments in the show. Like, they're basically Deus Ex Machinas, but scary. Like, really scary.
Well, aren't all Deus Ex Machinas kind of scary? Like, a little bit?
I mean, I guess, but most of them don't fill me with a great sense of dread at the age of 20.
That's true. That's valid. Okay. So, the voice of Barbie in this movie is, and for a lot of Barbie movies, is Kelly Sheridan. And something I didn't know about her is that she's from Ottawa. Like, she was born in Ottawa.
Oh.
The capital of my fine nation.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I lived there for a year. And...
just throwing all your personal information on the internet in this podcast.
Ottawa has, like, multiple million people in the greater Ottawa area. Like...
but how many are called Mina?
Okay, probably not a lot, but... I mean...
and my address is...
anyway, interrupter. Anyway... she also plays Starlight Glimmer on My Little Pony right now. And yeah. Like, I knew I recognized her voice from like other Barbie movies, obviously, but
yeah, she's been in a few.
But I didn't know that she played Starlight Glimmer. So it's very strange for me because she was also, go ahead.
I wanted to add that she's in a lot of Barbie movies, but she's usually not Barbie in those movies.
Oh.
Like, I counted, and she's Barbie in, like, a few, but not the majority.
Yeah, because she stayed Barbie for a little while in the early days, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that she was also on, like, a Canadian television show that I used to watch as a kid called Martin Mystery.
Was that good?
It was very strange. It was, like, a gross-out, like, children's, like, quasi-horror, like... it was very strange. I used to enjoy it as a kid, but, like, looking back, it was very weird television to market.
Like Goosebumps?
Yeah, it was kind of like Goosebumps, yeah.
Anyway, so after the fairies scare us to death, we cut to Barbie teaching a young girl the Sugar Plum Ballet from Ballet Dance, from the thing.
From the Nutcracker. Jason, it's the name of the movie! She's teaching her the Waltz of the Sugar Plum Fairy. From the Nutcracker.
Yeah. Mina, it's late. I'm allowed to stutter in the brain. Anyway, so we cut to Barbie teaching a young girl the Sugar Plum Ballet dance from the Nutcracker. And the girl has anxiety about...
that's Kelly. What? The girl's name is Kelly.
Is that actually... oh, yeah, she says, Kelly, you're never gonna... yeah, I didn't... That didn't, like, register up until this point that you mentioned it. So, girl has anxiety about freezing up. So Barbie tells her a story about the ballet, which is not canon, according to the wiki. Nothing that Barbie tells her is canon, but I guess this is a movie.
Wait, okay, explain. What do you mean?
So they didn't adapt the Nutcracker ballet story exactly.
Yeah.
So Uncle Drosselmeyer, I'm not sure if he was strict and stern in the ballet itself, but he was like a magician and a toy maker and like he did stuff to make children happy and stuff like that.
Okay. But it's like it's still canon to the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if there was an aunt in the ballet. I don't think there was an aunt. But the clock is there. The clock and the owl, those are canon. Anyway, so as Barbie is like narrating this story, we pan out into the snow and then the snow turns into a snow globe. See, the snow gets turned into the inside of a snow globe, and then we see a giant human Barbie that isn't Barbie, it's Clara from the ballet, and she's looking at the snow globe, and it's Christmas, and she's decorating a Christmas tree in her house, and her uncle comes in and he's like, oh, I'm old and mean and everyone hates me because I'm awful. And Barbie's like, yeah, that's right, and also look at this figurine I have of that my mom gave me.
Do you mean the Christmas ornament?
Yeah. We never learn what happened to her parents.
I'm pretty sure they're just dead. Like,
pretty sure they're just dead. Standard parent syndrome. They're all dead. Also, fun fact, when I was a kid, a child, and also up to this day, we did have figurines like that in the house for each person. So, like, my parents had two, one for each, and I had one, and my brother had one. We all had our own figurines that we put on the Christmas tree. It is.
I think that we have one of those for my family, but it's like snowmen. So like, it's a little snowman family, and they're all like labeled. I forget though. I haven't seen that Christmas
morning. Anyway, do you have anything to add right now
to the plot synopsis that you're doing?
Yeah. No, because I have a lot. I have a lot of notes, and I'm not gonna stop unless you stop me. Just so you know. Just raise your hand. Well, I won't see it.
So maybe let's move a little quicker, because I feel like right now we're doing like a play-by-play, and that'll take us an hour and a half.
Okay, so you want me to wrap it up, like very quickly go through everything?
Well, we're going to go through everything as we go through our part, as we go through our list.
Okay, so should I keep going?
Make it a little quicker.
Okay, but I will point, can I focus on one tiny detail before we move on?
Yes.
Okay, so the old uncle dude comes up.
Drosselmeyer.
Yeah, Uncle Drosselmeyer comes up to Clara and is like, we need more candles. There's not enough candles. But in the entire film, there are no candles in sight. So I'm not sure what that was about. There is a fireplace, but there's no candles. So I guess he was right. They do need more candles because there are none. Anyway, so I hope that was worth the time that I spent thinking about it. Eventually, Aunt Drosselmeyer rings the bell and comes in. And she's my favorite character. And I love her so much. And I have written like a entire paragraph for her here. So one of the first lines she has is her uncle like berates her. Clara's uncle berates her, which is like, I guess, his sister? Are they related? I'm not sure. Anyway.
So Aunt and Uncle Drosselmeyer in the Barbie movie, I'm pretty sure they're siblings.
Like, I guess they have the same last name, so they kind of have to be related.
Yeah, I think that they're like, like one of Clara's parents' siblings.
So Aunt Drosselmeyer is like, don't worry. I'll wait until your party's over before I perform any mischief. And I really like that line. It was very funny. And I like the animation when she delivers it. It's very endearing. And I really like her character. She's voiced by Kathleen Barr. And I have attributed the best voice and the best dress to this character, which I'll talk about later. And I really like Kathleen Barr. She's going to come up a lot in this podcast. She is a Canadian voice actor. I'm not sure if she's from Ontario.
She's either from Ontario or Vancouver. There's only two provinces in this whole country.
Anyway, she's been in a bunch of Barbie films and shows. Like, she's been in Swan Lake. She's been in Fairytopia. She's been in Princess of the Pauper. And she's been in a bunch of other stuff and a bunch of anime dubs, along with a few of the voice actors in this movie.
They've all been in a few anime dubs.
And very obscure anime as well.
Well, I mean, definitely older anime. Like, Ranma 1/2 isn't really obscure, but it's old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not many new anime fans are going to go back and watch Escaflowne and Ranma 1/2.
Yeah.
Kelly and the voice of Prince Eric, Kirby. Oh, I love that. Kelly and Kirby, that's cute. They were both in Inuyasha for a few episodes.
They've been in a lot of shows together.
Yeah,
which is interesting, I think.
I like that.
And Uncle Drosselmeyer is voiced by French Tickner, which is a very odd name to me. And he hasn't done any other Barbie stuff at all. This was just a one-off Barbie thing. He hasn't expanded his Barbie brand at all. Anyway, and to go back to the rest of the plot, Aunt Drosselmeyer is like this very well-traveled lady that's been all around the world.
Yeah, I really liked that because we didn't get a lot of strong, like, female friends of Barbies in this movie. And I really liked that Aunt Drosselmeyer kind of filled that role.
And even from the start, we know that Aunt Drosselmeyer, like, the uncle is supposed to represent grow up, mature, be an adult, be serious, don't have, like, childish fantasies. And Aunt Drosselmeyer is like, be free, be yourself. You can, like, still have dreams and make it in the world like I have. You can still have adventure in your life. So that's what those two characters represent. And I'm going to, like, point out one line that Aunt Drosselmeyer says, like, a few minutes afterwards. She's, like, telling Bob, like, Clara all of her, like, adventures outside, like, what she did. And at some point she says, I couldn't say no to the king.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Foreshadowing.
Oh. I didn't catch that the first time.
I did, and I caught a few other things. So the next thing that happens is she gives presents to Clara and her brother, which we didn't mention. Clara has a brother. His name is Tommy, and
he's a little troublemaker, is what he is.
Yeah, he's awful. We hate him. So as the aunt is giving them the toys, Tommy calls Clara's toy ugly and then breaks it.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. See, that's like a big mood for, like that's a big older sister mood for me.
Because of personal reasons?
Yes.
Okay. Before Tommy breaks the nutcracker, what the aunt says to Clara is, he may not look like much something, and then she says, but on the inside beats the heart of a prince. And I'm like, oh.
Now, see, that's not even really foreshadowing. That's just her telling the truth.
That's some mad foreshadowing. And actually, I don't know if you noticed, but when Tommy gets his toys, he says, what does he say? Hang on, I wrote this down somewhere. Give me a sec. Hello, future Jason. Just popping in to say the toys are called a Grenadier Guard and a Bengal Lancer. I couldn't remember at the time, but I remembered later in the recording. I'm just pointing it out now so you don't get confused. Also, when the aunt mentions that she's going to wait until after the party to start any mischief, she wasn't joking, because, like, she literally waited until after the party to cause magic stuff to happen. So just wanted to point that out. That's also foreshadowing. This movie has so much foreshadowing. Also, in the entire episode, we refer to Grandfather Drosselmeyer as Uncle Drosselmeyer. That's because we forgot he was her grandfather and not her uncle. We got it wrong, so just pretend we didn't. Anyway, back to the episode. So when Tommy gets his toys, he says, oh, a guard something.
It's a specific word. Pontifical Swiss Guard.
A pontifical guard. I think is what he says. I don't know. I'll listen back and, like, edit it in. Anyway, he says, a guard and a brigadier lancer, I think. And so these are two, like, remember Captain
Candy?
Oh, my
goodness!
And General, what's his face?
And I have it.
That's them.
Oh!
Even more foreshadowing.
Oh, I like that a lot!
Again, this movie is, like, has a lot of foreshadowing, and it's very, like, tightly and concisely written. Like, ties in, all threads just merge together, and there's a lot of, like, hints and nods. Anyway, I'm not sure if there's any references to the original ballet, because I didn't bother reading much of it. I'm lazy.
We're both lazy.
As Barbie gazes longingly into the Nutcracker's eyes, his eyes glint, and the movie is just setting up that relationship so hard. And Tommy breaks the Nutcracker's arms because he's like, I want him to lead my army. And Clara's like, no, he's mine. And Tommy's like, I don't have any sense of other people's personal belongings. And he breaks it, then he's sad. And then Barbie, like, makes him a makeshift cast out of, like, a small ribbon for his broken arm.
Yeah,
the small sling. Eventually, she falls asleep. I think the movie just cuts to her being asleep. And then the uncle and aunt are, like, talking about her future.
And then we finally get to meet Tim Curry. Gay icon.
What are you talking about? Which gay icon are we talking about?
The Mouse King.
Oh, no, he's not. I refuse. No, he's not the gay icon. Mina, trust me when I say I have notes here about actual gay icons. He's not one of them.
Okay, but, like, we have to acknowledge the fact that...
Is he queer-coded, though?
No, the Mouse King is definitely not queer-coded.
Exactly.
But we have to acknowledge the fact that Rocky Horror Picture Show is, you know, seminal queer media.
How does the tie into this?
Well, he's in it, Jason.
Oh, is it the same actor?
Yes!
I
just said Tim Curry!
I don't know him very well.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know him. I'm sorry. I don't know him very well. I didn't look at his entire IMDb page, honestly. Anyway, so we get like a sweeping like shot of the room when it's 12 o'clock and the grandfather clock rings. It's actually called the grandmother clock in the wiki, not a grandfather clock, which is like wink, wink. So if you notice, the owl on the clock has green eyes.
Yes.
And the aunt has also got green eyes.
Oh!
Foreshadowing!
Well, see, I knew that they had the same voice actress.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah. Basically, I'm saying she's basically a witch.
Oh!
That's what I think. That's my interpretation. Because Uncle Drosselmeyer was like a magician in the original. It makes sense that they made the aunt a witch magician person here. And she does do stuff at the end that kind of confirms that. Anyway, so the clock rings at midnight, and I noted here that clocks that ring out at night must suck, because I don't know if you've ever tried sleeping with a big loud bell clanging in the background. Anyway, so the clock rings, blah blah blah. Aunt Drosselmeyer is definitely a witch, and I think the owl's eyes glint and sparkle, and then I'm not sure from where, but glistening glitter starts flying around the tree and then goes into the mouse hole, and then the mice start like marching out, and they start like messing up the tree, but they don't have a reason for doing that. Why are they just breaking things? They're breaking like toys and baubles and stuff, and like, why are they doing this? They're just invading this living room for no reason. Anyway, the Nutcracker comes alive and he starts fighting
chaos them. Jason it's for gay chaos,
it's the plot. So the Nutcracker, by the way, feel free to chime in whenever you feel like you have something to say. I don't want to dominate the conversation. Okay.
Moment of silence.
Do you have something to say?
No.
Okay, fine. So the Nutcracker comes alive and starts fighting them. And he kicks over like a big box or a chair. I don't remember what it was. And the mice just are underneath it and they're crushed by it. So those mice are dead, basically.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Okay, Prince Eric has a body count.
Yeah, he does. I think it's 4 mice so far. And that's not counting past kills.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's a brutal prince. And Clara wakes up and like witnesses this madness and is like, I must be dreaming. And then the Mouse King starts antagonizing Prince Eric. So Clara is holding a vase above the Mouse King's head as he's about to kill the Nutcracker with like his magic scepter that can transform. It can transform into any weapon, which I guess...
Which seems pretty guess, OP.
Yeah, kind guns of weren't invented back then, I guess. Because you can just make a gun. Like a cannon or like just any kind of revolver or rifle. Okay, so the staff can do 2 things. It can turn into any weapon that the Mouse King can use.
To be honest with you, Jason, I think it can do one thing. And I think that one thing that it can do is like transfiguration magic.
Oh, maybe. But I was going to say... No, not just transfiguration. Wait, it can also animate because he makes a golem.
He transformed the rocks into a sentient being.
Well, why doesn't he transform the prince
into a not sentient being? Well, that's what he was trying to do.
I transfigurate you from alive to dead. Okay, so what the Mouse King can do is he can, just by thinking about it, he can change his scepter into any sort of weapon. But he can also, by rhyming, and it has to be rhyming, turn anything into anything else. So what he does is when Clara comes up holding a vase, he makes her smaller with rhyming. And he does other stuff with rhyming as well. He turns people into stone. And he also makes a stone giant with rhyming out of like a stone pillar. I'm saying, if the Mouse King really wants to kill the Nutcracker so bad, he doesn't need to chop him apart. He can just say, wibbly wobbly, you're dead. And the prince just... All I'm saying is, I feel like the Mouse King is underusing his power. So anyway, he makes her very small.
It could be that there's like some sort of like Mouse Geneva Convention.
You can turn people into stone and indiscriminately send stone giants after people and like rule over entire kingdoms and like terrorize the land, but you can't kill people with this specific type of rhyming magic.
You can't commit
First degree murder.
You can't commit direct acts of murder.
Which he kind of, I mean, he doesn't ever kill anyone. He just turns them into stone forever.
Exactly. That's not murder.
So it's fine.
Well, because they can be reanimated.
Yeah, but only if, like, another Deus Ex Machina happens. Yeah, spoiler alert. For anyone who hasn't seen the Nutcracker yet and really wanted to, you're not going to enjoy the rest of this review. Anyway, Clara's really small. I don't remember how they get out of that situation, but I think the Nutcracker comes to her aid. And at some point, Clara kicks her shoe at someone. The Nutcracker tells her to climb, like, a piece of decorative tree vine thing they put on
garland.
The garland on the mantelpiece, and she does after the mice start attacking them, and she kicks her shoe very, very well with incredibly good aim. And she hits the Mouse King, and the Mouse King gets woozy and passes out, and then the prince follows after her. I think he sets his arm at the end. Yeah, so at some point they get away. I don't remember how the mice run. What happens to the mice? Do they just flee? I think they just flee.
Yeah, they flee.
Flee, and the prince comes down from the garland, and so does Barbie. After an epic battle scene, the prince just, like, sets his arm in, because he's made of wood, so he doesn't feel any pain, apparently. And the owl on the grandmother clock flies down and gives Clara a necklace that was worn by the doll she put on the tree earlier, and is like, So you're really small, go help the prince with the thing. You need to find the sugar plum fairy. And when you do, the kingdom will be well, the Mouse King will be dead, and you can come back by opening this locket.
Now, something that I did remember when we watched it together was the twist of this movie, where they have to go find the sugar plum princess.
Yeah.
Now, Jason.
I didn't remember. No, you spoiled it for me halfway through. How dare you?
I did. I'm sorry. So it turns out that Clara is indeed the Sugar Plum Princess.
Yeah, she's the Sugar Plum Princess they need to find. It was all the friendship we made along the way.
It was in her heart.
That's also foreshadowed, by the way.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so
oh yeah, well, because isn't the crystal on the necklace a heart?
No, it's the grass. She turns into Jesus at some point. Remember the grass? Okay, I'll get to it.
What are you talking about?
The owl gives her the necklace, and they go into the mouse hole, I think. Yeah, and they fall into a wormhole, I think, and it turns into ice. So they fall into an ice wormhole, and they end up in an ice cave.
Which brings us to your favorite dance?
Wait, no, we're not there yet. Hang on. I have more stuff written down.
Jason, you know we've been recording for like almost an hour, right?
It's fine, Mina. It's fine. This is all quality work. So one of my favorite moments in the movie is right now, where the Nutcracker has lost one of his arms again. Clara is like, let me give you a hand, and his hand's fallen off, so she picks it up and gives it to him. And this happens a lot in the movie. I love how they do this thing where he constantly loses his arm and puts it back on again. I think it's really funny. Anyway, so back the dance, as you said, do you want to add anything to the dance? Do you want to start with it? Because it's my favorite dance in the movie.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this movie doesn't have songs because it was adapted from a ballet.
I feel the need to mention that, like, there are other Barbie movies that were adapted from ballets that do have songs in them.
Yeah, that's true. Does Swan Lake have a song? Any songs?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, so this is my favorite one. It's one of the creepy fairies comes back. I think it's the blonde one.
It's the blonde one, yeah.
Yeah, and she's like pulling at Clara's sleeve, like, plots this way, but she doesn't actually say that. And the other snow fairies come out, wink, of the snow. They start dancing around and they do the snowflake dance. And it's my favorite, like, music track in the film. They are very extra. Like, they take a very long time dancing around, showing off their dancing ballet skills. They do a whole singer dance routine, and they do all that so that they eventually can break one of the walls that the prince and Clara, I was gonna say the princess, but that's not revealed yet, so that the prince and Clara can move on with their quest. I would like to say the fairies kind of ship those two already, because they, like, bring them closer together.
Yeah.
Then nudge them, like, now kiss. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Hey, consider taking off your shipping goggles for a second, horny fairies.
Yeah. Just tell the movie to stop doing that. And this is what I said earlier. As Barbie and the prince walk out, you can see Barbie's footprints. It's grass in the snow. How is that possible?
Oh, okay.
That's how you know she's a sugar plum fairy princess. I always say sugar plum fairy, even though she's a sugar plum princess.
That's where the Barbie movie kind of differs from
from the actual ballet. I will say, they're both the prince and the princess. I don't know if you noticed, but they're a prince and a princess. Because it's, get it? And neither of them both of them are hiding their princehood from the other.
Their royalty?
Yeah, their royalty. Like, both of them are in hiding of their royalty, except Clara isn't actively doing that. She doesn't know.
Clara doesn't know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But they're both hiding it, whether or not they know it, which is another theme in this movie. Like, not really a theme, it's a thing that happens. This movie doesn't really have a theme, except near the very end, where it all ties together. So they move on outside. Barbie is Jesus, because she makes flowers happen. I actually have a note here that is like, Barbie is Jesus theory. And then it's like, arguments. Can walk on water, and then performs miracles.
Well, okay.
She does walk on water, though, because they cross the sea at the end or at the middle.
The point of being Jesus is because you're the son, or, well, you're the offspring of...
Or part.
God.
So so the question we're asking here, is Barbie a god?
Are Barbie's absentee parents a deity and a mortal who immaculately conceived the child of that deity?
I mean, her aunt is magic. Like, has very powerful magic powers.
Are we saying that Aunt Drosselmeyer is a demigod?
Yeah, I think that's what we're saying. I think that's a very valid reading that you can extrapolate from the movie. Anyway, they're out in the snow, and Barbie mentions that the snow isn't even cold. And the second I heard that, I was like, the snow is sugar. Like, the snow is definitely sugar, but that's not actually addressed. And as they're walking around, a bat thing is spying on them. He's called Pim. And the bat flies around, Pim flies around, and he goes back to the Mouse King and reports to him that the Nutcracker and a human girl have entered, what was the name of the place again? Magic Land? It has a place. It has a name. It has a name. I don't remember it.
I want to say it was the Candy Kingdom?
No, it had a name, like Gloria Land. Okay, so the name of the land is actually Parthenia, not Gloria Land. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. It's just a place. It probably is something from the ballet. And they walk and they go into like a village that is like in ruins, and they're like, oh, what happened here? And, like, Clara picks up a doll and looks at it and is like, oh, the savagery, people are dead. And it reminded me so much of the Mulan scene, which we talked about when we were watching it. And you mentioned that the Mulan scene was also inspired from a different film.
What?
Didn't you say that the Mulan scene was...
Okay, sorry. Be a little more specific right now.
So, you know, when Clara and the prince...
Yes.
...walk into a village, and she picks up
yes.
a doll, and it's like, oh, it's a doll, but it's left alone in the snow.
Oh, right. Okay.
The Mulan scene is what I've
written that. There was a scene in Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of the first movies that Hayao Miyazaki directed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in that movie where Nausicaa is like adoptive uncle. I don't know what their relation actually is. He's just like an older man in her life who is like a paternal figure.
Mm-hmm.
And he is like going through the wasteland, and he like stumbles upon this village that has been consumed by miasma, and they find this doll in the dust, and the doll like crumbles in his hand. Anyway, that was my cinematic parallel.
Moving on. So they find the doll, and they also find a pink horse that just exists in this universe.
Marzipan.
Pink horses are a thing. Marzipan. By the way, the first time around, I didn't know what his name was. I'm assuming it's a he. I don't actually know. Their name. This horse is non-binary. So I didn't know what their name was. But after I watched it the second time, I figured it out. Because what happens next is the prince, Nutcracker, and the princess, Clara, are accosted by two very, very strong children that have very good aim.
Two rowdy
rascals. Okay. Yeah. And they knock off the Nutcracker's hat, and he's like, they have very good aim, which is also foreshadowing for the movie, apparently. This movie has a lot of foreshadowing. The fighting stops, the kids stop trying to murder them with snow, which is actually sugar, and they all like hang out, and they're like, we're a team now. And they, Clara gives the doll back, and the girl's like, oh, it's Marzipan the horse. I've written down here Mandalorian sniper children. Because they have very good aim. The children explain that the gingerbread village was attacked by the Mouse King's army, which is mice. And if you remember, earlier in the film, the maid that Clara was talking to at the start was like, oh no, the mice have found the way into the presents. And she picked up like a gingerbread house that was partially chewed up.
Oh!
That was Tommy doing that. That was Tommy ate that. And that's also foreshadowing for this moment of the gingerbread village being attacked and like raided by mice.
Oh my gosh!
Again, so many layers in this film. The next thing I've written down here is Prince Eric sucks, because the first thing the children start talking about after explaining what happened to the village is how this is all Prince Eric's fault, and how he's a terrible ruler, and how everyone hates him. And the Nutcracker's like, well, I mean, you know, I mean, don't be so... I guess, I mean, you don't know him and stuff. And they're like, no, we don't need to. He sucks. He's not here to help us. He abandoned us, and it's his fault we're in this mess. And he's like, I mean, let's move on to the plot. It's really fun. Everyone in this movie hates the prince so much.
I think that there must have been some sort of like disinformation campaign.
You mean by the Mouse King? Are we going that deep into like political matter of the movie?
Yeah, I think that something must have happened where like discontent was spread by, you know, the Mouse King, and then suddenly the prince disappears and everyone's like, oh, he's abandoned us.
Well, we do know,
but really,
we do know what happened that led the prince to not receiving the throne the second his father, I guess, died. We don't know what happened to his dad either.
I think the Mouse King killed his dad.
Maybe, but what we do know is that the king put the Mouse King in charge.
Yeah.
Willingly, until the prince was old enough.
Unless it wasn't willing.
Unless it was foul play. The Mouse King actually turned the king into someone who is dead. He used the unforgiving curse on the king, and he couldn't use it ever again. Anyway, we'll learn about that later. There's a lot of political intrigue in this film, and a lot of it is a metaphor for the instigating actions that led to the First World War. No, it's not. It's nothing to do with that. But that would be interesting if it were. Anyway, back to the actual movie. They run into the woods after encountering some mice. I think they just walk around and they chance upon a bunch of mice carrying, like, people around. Is that what they were carrying? Or just, no, were they just carrying gingerbread bits? I don't remember. And Marzipan runs away from them until he is needed for another Deus Ex Machina later in the movie. And as they're running into the woods, they find what I've called the Treehouse Resistance, which is basically a bunch of people led by the two other significant characters in this film. Oh, a Bengal. Sorry, I just remembered. A Bengal Lancer and a Grenadier Guard. That's what they're called. Bengal Lancer, Grenadier Guard.
Bengal.
There you go.
Well, that explains where we get our first character of color from.
Yeah, the only character of color in this entire film.
The only character of color in this entire movie.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, not even the villagers are like people of color. Everyone's super white.
Everyone is super white. Like, sure, it's Drosselmeyer. Like, the Nutcracker was definitely set in Germany as like the ballet. Mm-hmm. Well, not even Germany, but like, you know, like
Russia.
Thank you.
There you go. Which is in Germany. So.
Okay. but yes.
Not even Germany. Completely different place.
Look, I have trouble telling European nations apart, like, on good days.
Oh, man. It's the American streak in you.
Yeah. You're right.
All I'm going to point out is that they've taken so many liberties with the rest of the text. They could have added more people of color in the background, at least. I guess we have Captain Candy. I mean, again, it was 2001, so people weren't as good with this as you would expect. But still, come on.
Like, brown people definitely existed, but white people's acknowledgement of brown people existing? Tenuous. tenuous at best.
All right, so they get thrown a rope ladder, they climb up, they run away from the mice who apparently can't see 10 feet ahead of them as they are. They run forward past the rope ladder. They meet a bunch of villagers with pitchforks, and the kids, thankfully, are just taken away at this point. The kids are just like, we'll go with these guys, and they're taken away after everyone's established that no one is hostile. Clara and the Nutcracker are led to meet Captain Candy, which is an Indian man, a Bengal lancer. He doesn't have a lance, though, does he? He has a sword, but not a lance.
I think artistic liberties might have been taken with that one.
Maybe. I guess lances are harder to animate than swords.
Well, also, lances aren't, like, as pretty as swords are.
How dare you?
I'm insulting myself, if anything, Jason. Like...
All right. Do you have anything else to add? You were saying something.
Yeah. So you don't often see sick people in movies, in Barbie movies, like at all. I think that Captain Candy?
It's Captain Candy. It's Captain Candy and Major Mint.
I was right. Thank you. I want to say Captain Candy might be the only Sikh person in, like, any Barbie movie. We'll figure that out later on. Or at least, like, the only visually identifiable Sikh person.
So anyway, they meet Major Mint. Who is this old British dude who's always very angry and flummoxed at everything.
Yeah, he's like very much the stereotype of what we think.
He's basically like Uncle Drosselmeyer, but as a soldier.
Yes.
But more rude. He's supposed to represent what Uncle Drosselmeyer represents, even though he's not in the movie anymore. And they have a conversation with them. What basically, again, Prince Eric sucks. Major Mint just goes really hard on the prince. He's like, he sucks, he's awful, he's terrible, he's irresponsible, I hate him, I hate his guts. They talk about how the king was worried that the prince was too responsible to run a kingdom, so he gave power to the Mouse King, and then the Mouse King didn't let go of that power. It's a whole thing about, like, consolidating power, power corrupts. It's a very, like, meaningful and deep narrative that really enriches the movie. Captain Candy, basically, as Major Mint is, like, really angrily spouting off all insults at the prince, and the Nutcracker's like, I mean, no, you're wrong, you didn't know him, you're not sure. He's, like, very visibly, like, really bummed out by this. Captain Candy just goes, no, you're wrong, remember, Major Mint, he was my best friend. And I'm like, more like your boyfriend. So this is where the, what did you call it?
It's a word rooted in the name Achilles, but I'm not sure whether or not it's pronounced like Achillean or Achillean. I want to say Achillean. It's the antonym of sapphic, because there are no real, like, adult women for Barbie to date. Or, you know, girls her age, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, how old are the fairies?
Not the children fairies,
the other non-children.
Oh, you mean
fairies.
Like the Waltz of the Snowflakes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the ones in the flower dance.
I don't know, but they don't really talk.
They do, except not in any language. They talk in crinkly bell sounds.
Yeah, that's not really the best. Like...
Let's go with Achillean or Achillean. I don't know. Whatever.
Achillean.
Let's go with the Achillean reading, which is Captain Candy and the Prince were definitely dating and in love. Which I don't think is canon, but that's what I'm choosing to believe. Because Captain Candy and the prince seem to like each other, except they don't really interact directly as knowing who is who in the movie, which is sad. But anyway, I also have written down here, Captain Candy has a rainbow feather, which is furthers my theory that he's gay and he loves the prince. You were going to say something?
No, that was it. The yeah was all okay.
Yeah, which I only noticed when he was about to die, when he was about to fall.
Well, he didn't.
Yeah, he didn't die. Captain Candy asks the Nutcracker what happened to the prince, because the Nutcracker mentions that the only way to defeat the Mouse King is if they found the Sugar Plum Princess. I heard the prince tell me that himself, and the Major Mint.
Hey, speaking of which, where is that guy?
And Nutcracker's like, he died. The Mouse King killed him. And Captain Candy's like, oh no, not the prince. He looks really sad. So they're definitely dating. Somehow they convince Major Mint and Captain Candy that finding the Sugar Plum Princess is the way to go. And that's the only way to defeating the Mouse King. And the bat person is watching, I think, at the time. Because he flies back and tells the Mouse King that's what they want to do. And then the Mouse King says, wonderful yeah. idea, Pym. I'm starting to rub off on you. And then Pym blushes. So I'm like, what? Hello? Does this movie want me to ship a bat and a mouse together? But no, that's not canon. I don't want it to be. I think what the Mouse King does is does he turn two mice into stone at that point? I don't remember. He turns two mice into stone, and he also creates a giant stone monster to go and kill the Nutcracker and Clara. Anyway, so the next thing I've written down here is Barbie has watched the ballet and isn't taking any nonsense from the Nutcracker's secret, in quotes, identity. So after the meeting, Nutcracker is sitting, like, looking sadly at the moon in the distance. Clara comes up to him and is like, okay, so you're the prince, right? Because I'm pretty sure you're the prince, because every single time someone...
Yeah, Clara... Yeah,
Clara knows her stuff.
Clara's genre savvy.
Yeah, she's read the script. She knows what's happening. She's like, every single time someone talks bad stuff about the prince, you're always like awkward and sad looking and frustrated. I'm pretty sure you're the prince, dude. And he's like, yep, that's me. She asks him why he didn't tell them. And he's like, how could I face them after I failed my people? Blah, 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 and got turned into a Nutcracker, which we never know what happened about the circumstances of his transformation from human to Nutcracker.
Yeah, true.
Actually, callback earlier, after he was first animated, after the first fight with the mice, Barbie asks him, how can you move? And he's like, I'm a person. And she's like, so before you were a Nutcracker, you were... And he's like, not a Nutcracker. He doesn't tell her he's a prince. Anyway, that was back then. Anyway, back to the present. I've written here that Major Mint sucks because they're trying to walk over like a rock bridge with floating rocks. And Major Mint... knocks mm-hmm. Captain Candy off accidentally. Captain Candy's about to fall off into a death drop, and what the prince does is he tears off one of his arms and uses it as like a makeshift grabby thing for Captain Candy to grab onto, and he rescues him and he pulls him up. Clara's like, that was very noble of him to save him, and he's like, it's the least I could do for an old friend. And at that point, you said, okay, Jason, ooh, the only time someone calls another man old friend is if they were a dog or a gay lover. So we have confirmation. So they go and find some boats that they're going to use to cross over the sea to find the island that the princess is at, supposedly. And Major Mint is like, we've got this. We're going to set up the boats so we can leave. You go find supplies, which is like, no one has eaten this entire movie. So I don't know what's happening. So the prince and Clara go off into the, not the woods, like the nothingness, because there's nothing there, and find a well, which apparently the prince knows is full of fairies or water. I'm not sure what he's doing. I'm pretty sure he thinks fairies are in there. He's like, mm-hmm. looks like someone sealed it up, and they open it and a bunch of fairies come out.
Oh, okay, this brings us to my favorite dance, which was the Waltz of the Flowers.
Yeah, because the fairies then one of the fairies is the other child from the intro.
Yes, the other terrifying child from the intro.
Yeah, they meet them, they greet them, they tell them in a language only the prince can understand that the Mouse King locked them up in the well and mm-hmm. they destroyed the forest for whatever reason. And they start dancing in the flower dance. As they dance, everything's like blooming like it did when Clara got her little Jesus moment. Everything's like trees are blossoming and then apples are forming and everyone's like... watching in wonderment as all the fairies look around and do stuff and fly about. And when apple falls on the prince's hand and he like tosses it in his...
It was very cute. It was very cute.
He tosses it in the air. He's like, supplies? And I'm like, that's not going to last like more than 2 days. Especially...
Jason, have you ever seen apples before in your life?
Yeah, I have.
You know you can keep apples like fresh in a refrigerator for like 2 months?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do they have a refrigerator?
Jason, there's a whole country made of ice, like a kilometer, like, all I'm saying is that apples keep for a million years.
No, they don't. They don't keep for a million years. They can spoil pretty fast.
All I'm saying is that the snowflake fairy could 100% hook them up with AC. that would preserve their apples.
Honestly, I feel like trying to freeze the apple with her powers is just going to make more damage to it. And also...
Oh, God. Does... I didn't say freeze. Well, that's... I said AC.
That's what all she... You want me to just fan her fingers in the direction of the apples to keep them cool?
Well, okay.
Even if the apples are in, like, never go bad, how many apples can you eat before going mad, Mina? Honestly.
A few.
There's not enough protein to keep you going. They need milk. They need...
You'll never get scurvy.
And he only grabs one apple.
Well, I think we are to assume that they get more, you know.
Yeah, and then all of them get destroyed anyway.
Yeah, but, you know, it's the intent. It's the intent that counts.
I guess. So anyway, the fairies dance around Barbie. And as they dance around her, they giggle. And Barbie's like, what are they saying? And the prince is like, they say you're beautiful. And I'm like, okay, so this is a sapphic reading.
Oh!
The fairies are gay.
Well, the fairies are, at the very least, some sort of non-Kinsey zero.
Yeah, the fairies are queer. But also the fairies then bring them together as well. Because even they ship them. Everything in this movie ships those two. I didn't like it, but you did, so I guess.
Well, okay, I can see how it could be perceived as heavy-handed. Because it was, but it was really cute and, like, feel good, so.
I guess. Anyway, so the rock monster agrees with me, because he chooses this moment to just, like, walk in and, like, smash.
To pop out of the ether?
Yeah, he just walks in and he just smashes the apples that they've gathered.
Oh, it's Hulk smash time.
Yeah.
You know?
He Hulk smashes. Actually, he's guided by Pym the Bat, because the Mouse King told Pym that he needs to guide the rock monster, because... He's sentient, but not, like, too sentient. So Pym is like, to the left, smash them, as they're running for their lives. And as the supplies get smashed, I think either the prince or Clara say, so much for the supplies. I think it's probably the prince.
Now, I feel the need to mention that the bat was 100% a knockoff of Bartok from Anastasia.
Was it, though?
Oh, it totally was.
Okay. I mean, I don't remember that movie very well because I only watched it once, but sure. So, the rock golem smashes, they run away. The rock golem reaches the shore, he smashes their boat so they can't leave. Major Mint's like, I spent an hour on that sail. I don't remember how long he spent. He spent some time on it. And then Marzipan comes in, and I've written here Deus Ex Marzipan.
Yes!
All the snow fairies freeze the sea, and the snow fairy from the intro distracts the golem flying around it and just being generally annoying while the bat is like, leave the fairy alone and kill those guys.
Commit crimes against the Mouse Geneva Conventions.
So the rock golem follows them into the ice sea. Captain Candy says, oh, he's too heavy. He's made of rock. He's gonna break through the ice, which was what I thought was gonna happen. So I was glad the movie acknowledged that. But he doesn't. And then Major Mint says, looks like the fairies did their job too well. And then what happens is the Nutcracker is like, stop the carriage. And everyone's like, no. And then they do it anyway. And he jumps off. And he runs towards the rock giant, and he slams his sword into the ice that starts cracking, and then Clara's like, be careful, and he's like, don't worry, wood floats. He starts cracking the ice, and then he pulls his sword out and runs away, and then the rock giant steps on the cracked ice and then falls and sinks to the sea forever. And that's how they defeat him. Okay, so I'm gonna just read these things. Rock golem dies because the nutcracker cracked the ice. Someone had to break the ice. A real icebreaker. Nutcracker? More like ice cracker.
I don't, those don't even merit a response.
Took me 20 minutes to think all those up. Anyway, the mist was created from the ice slowly melting. They're in the fog, and then they're like, oh, we're never gonna find the island, and we don't have any supplies, and we're gonna die. And then Clara's like, her senses are tingling, and she's like, don't give up, we've come so far. You've done amazing things. And she tells to the Nutcracker, you did amazing stuff. And he's like, yeah, but nothing matters until you find the princess. She's basically trying to cheer everyone on, to like tell them you can do stuff on your own, you don't need the princess for this. But anyway, she walks like a few feet forward into the fog with the Nutcracker, and ta-da, the island is there. And as they walk in the island, I don't remember what the Nutcracker tells her, but he basically reminds her that she can go back to her house, and she like takes a moment to look at the necklace she has. And when she takes that moment, the rest of the group walk forward into what appears to be a castle, but actually it's a trap.
It's just a big paper like drop thing.
It's like a facade. What was the name of that admiral?
Akbar?
Yeah, Admiral Akbar. It's a trap.
It's a trap?
So Pim set up this trap. Everyone in the group is caged except for Clara, who's not even in the castle at the time. The cage is lifted up by other bats, I think. Pim can't find Clara, and he's like, oh well, doesn't matter. She can't get out of the island unless she's part mermaid. And I was like, were they already planning that movie from the start?
Yeah, that was something that I was also wondering.
Like, what's going on here?
I think that is like a drop for that one.
I think that's what that was. Anyway, so Barbie's sitting on the beach as the ice around her has already started melting, and it's just like small icebergs in the sea. And she's basically contemplating how much she is screwed and how she's gonna have to go back home because there's nothing here for her. Everyone's already imprisoned. And then the second creepy fairy comes around and is like, hi, remember me? I'm the second creepy fairy, the one with the flowers. And they basically, I don't know, did she summon a bunch of other fairies and they make a garland out of flowers that like they use as a seat for her to sit on, and they fly her to the castle that the Mouse King is in and that her friends are captured in. They just like plot this way, come on, hurry up, we can't wait for you to get out of this island on your own. And they also plan a revolution. I'm not sure exactly what they do. They just go up to the children in the treehouse resistance place and they just tell them a bunch of stuff, and the children are like, yeah, we should rebel against the Mouse King. And the fairies are like, great. And I'm thinking, why didn't the fairies do this already? But I guess they just know better. So the people are ready to rebel, and the Mouse King hears about this from the bat again, and he's like, round them all up into my castle. There's not a lot of them. I'm not sure what happened to all the villagers. It's like 10 of them.
I think they didn't have the computer...
That would make sense, actually.
Technology.
The villagers don't really revolt, though. They don't really revolt. They just get captured before they can even start the revolution, which is really sad. Anyway, I've written here Barbie rolls a nat 20 on stealth because she's basically walking around the castle trying to find her friends and just like stealthing past all the guards. And she sees the Mouse King building a pyre in the courtyard, shouting, more wood, more wood. She walks up to a couple of guards and she's like, the Mouse King sent me. He wants you in the courtyard, or he'll turn you into house flies, or was it horse flies? And apparently that really unconvincing lie worked because they are terrified of the...
They're mice! What do you want from them?
They're sentient mice, and also they're guards, so they really should know better. And also there's no human people in the castle that work for the king. I guess we assume there must be because the mice aren't startled by Clara's presence.
Yeah.
But we don't really see any of them. But anyway, she achieves her goal. The mice guards go away, and she goes into this like seemingly empty prison cell. We see from the perspective of the Nutcracker and the Major Mint and Captain Candy that they're behind like an invisible wall that Barbie can't see through. So there's this big round room with no one in it, seemingly. And Barbie's looking around going, why would the Mouse King station guards outside an empty room? And this is your moment. Go on.
In this room, the Mouse King has set up some sort of, you know, illusion to hide our sweet boy, our sweetest boy. So they touch hands across the, like, through the barrier.
Yeah, they do the thing.
And it's like this, they do the thing.
They do the thing where they, like, touch hands together. Like, one puts the hand in front of the other.
It's very cute.
And as Barbie touches the illusion, she takes a torch from the wall and, like, swings it at the invisible wall, and it shatters and it vanishes. And everyone's like, you freed us, congratulations. And Mr. Candy, as, like, Clara and the prince hug, he's like, oh, well, shouldn't be seeing that, huh? And Major Mint does the same thing. And Mr. Candy, like, averts his eyes. They're just hugging Captain Candy.
It's because he's jealous, Jason.
Yeah, maybe. But he doesn't know the prince is the Nutcracker yet.
Oh, true.
So why did he do that? He's like, oh, inappropriate touching. Whatever. So they run out and fight the Mouse King. And the Mouse King is like, I don't need you. I don't even need them. And he turns to the villagers and he turns them all into stone. Because he doesn't need them to rule. He can just be a king with no people. The Nutcracker is doing a very good job of fighting the king. And the king gets really angry. So what he does is he grows in size. He gets really big and overwhelms the prince. What happens next is, as the Mouse King's about to kill the prince for good, Clara steps in front of the prince and is like, "You suck, Mouse King." And the Mouse King is, "I'm going to make you even smaller." And Clara's like, "That's fine. I don't even care." And as he's about to do that, the prince wields his sword and swings it. And the reflective sheen of his sword deflects the spell onto the Mouse King. And the Mouse King grows smaller instead, which I thought was very silly.
Mm-hmm. But it works. It's good, like, children's movie. We need to wrap it up right now.
I'm pretty sure this is a trope that's about reflective surfaces, like, winning the day.
Yeah. Well, it's also a way to make sure that your protagonists are nonviolent. Yeah. If the antagonist attacks you and you reflect the attack back at the antagonist, you're not, like, actively participating.
I mean, you're still contributing to the other person's...
No, you are. You definitely are, but, like, on the surface level...
It's more passive, I guess. Like, passively murdering someone by redirecting, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a tiger sound effect as the king transforms from normal, from big size to tiny size, which I think was like, what? Mm-hmm. But then he runs away. He gets into a sewer. The Nutcracker is like, "Yay, we won, but I'm also kind of dying, but not really because I'm made of wood." So Clara's like, "You were so brave. You beat him. Congratulations." And the Nutcracker's like, "No, you were brave." And Clara's like, "Okay, I'm gonna kiss you so you stop talking." So they kiss, and it's a magic kiss, and the magic kiss turns the Nutcracker into Prince Eric. It's like, whoa, he looks really boring. He doesn't look very attractive.
Yeah, he's pretty basic, but you gotta appreciate the fact that, again, they were working with, like, very little power.
Yeah, all
computers.
The animation budget went into animating that one expression Aunt Drosselmeyer had at the start. So Captain Candy's really happy, and Major Mint is like, "Oh, the prince. Oh, the prince." He suddenly realizes he's been talking, like... For talking he's bad, been... he's like, we go, "Oh, Prince sucks, Prince is awful." And he realizes he's been telling the prince how much awful he thinks he is. He has this very funny moment of realization.
Yes.
I don't remember how Clara transforms into the princess, but the prince basically goes, "I know how we won. The sugar plum princess was with us all along. Clara, you're the sugar plum princess." And it's like, "Am I?" And then suddenly she's in a dress, and it's like, "Oh, I guess I am."
Now, speaking of the dress.
Go on then.
I'm not actually a huge fan of the... So, Jason, I don't know if you've ever... Have you ever taken a ballet class?
I haven't, no. I haven't had the honor.
So, I was enrolled briefly in a ballet class as a child, and then again as, like, a teen. Very briefly. And I just do not like romantic length tutus. I don't like wearing them. I don't like dancing in them. Other people look good. I don't.
Okay, that's valid. You're valid.
Like, they look cute for maybe 2 minutes, and then you go to do anything, and you're just tangled.
Okay, so the entire dance that happens 5 minutes later, you would say, wrong, not possible, bad.
Oh, no. Okay, I thought that looked cute. I thought, again, like, on me, I don't like it. But the dance, like, the choreography, the whole movie, the choreography was great. Like, I really liked what they did with the choreography. Like, shout out to
the animators.
Yeah, well, no, I was gonna say shout out to the animators, but also shout out to the members of the New York City Ballet who, like, consulted on the movie.
The fairies, I think, give the prince his crown because he's the king now because he killed the other king, and that's how, well, not killed, defeated, and that's how that works. Like Roman emperors, and he's like, "I promise to be a fair king and not suck," and everyone's happy even though they hated him 5 minutes ago. And Clara turns everyone from stone to normal, and everyone starts celebrating via dance. Major Mint and Captain Candy dance together, and the kids dance as well for some reason, and at the end Clara and the prince dance together, and as they are dancing, everything is getting fixed. Like, the color comes back to the land is healed magically, everything gets, like, transformed back to normal. the pyre gets turned into a fountain that I think sprays pink water. I don't remember. Everything gets like super colorful and super nice and pretty. And everything gets reverted back to what it was when the king wasn't the Mouse King. It feels like more like a King Arthur thing, like a Shakespearean, like if the good king is around, the land is good. But if the bad king, the land bad. And I guess this is happening with the Sugar Plum Princess's power. So they dance and dance and dance. It's a very decently animated ballet for 2001.
Yeah.
And Drenz looks pretty good in the dance. And then as they dance, they look at each other longingly. And then the bat comes in and steals the necklace. The Mouse King is riding the bat and he's laughing. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha. And he opens the necklace and the magic spills out. And one of the children throws a snowball at the Mouse King and they fall off the cliff, which I guess was foreshadowed by the good aim thing. The magic has been unlocked. Clara's like, oh no, I have to go back home now, because that's what the necklace did, because she was like, I don't want to go back home, and now she has to. She just starts vanishing in front of everyone. Everyone was really sad and upset, and she wakes up in her house without her dress, with her pajamas, and everyone thinks she's insane. She's like, where did the Nutcracker go? Where did the Mouse King go? There was a very complex geopolitical situation that I left things at. And things are very sensitive. Anyone could try and overthrow the prince. You don't understand. The crown is in danger. I need to go back and protect him with my divine powers that I have now. Also, where's my dress? I liked it. I looked good in it. Also, I knew how to dance ballet in it. So the uncle is like, I think you're crazy. And she's like,
thank goodness for Aunt Drosselmeyer. Thank goodness.
Yeah, she's like, where's my aunt? And the aunt is like, hi, I'm here. Remember me?
With my young gentleman friend.
With my young gentleman friend that he just happened to have around. I walked in the gardens and there he was. And she brings in, who is it? It's Prince Eric.
It's Prince Eric.
But he's not called Prince Eric. He's just the son of a very dear friend of hers, who I guess was the king.
I couldn't say no to the king, Jason.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Ah!
Oh my god. It all ties back. Does she know the is the king alive? And is she dating him?
I think the king is definitely dead.
Okay. She's still a demigod, though. The aunt is still a demigod in the canon. So she's like, look who it is. And then Clara looks at him and she's like, oh boy. Oh my, it's him. It's Prince Eric, the man. He's safe. He secured the throne. He somehow managed to get into my reality. Now, at this point, I'm pretty sure Clara knows that her aunt is a witch and a demigod, because, like, she looks at Clara. She gives Clara, like, a look.
A knowing look.
And she ships it. The uncle is like,
is it highly inappropriate?
Highly inappropriate. Such familiarity, because the prince kisses Clara's hand. And the aunt is like, he's gonna stay for dinner. And he's like, okay, fine, whatever. I'll let him stay for dinner. And he's like, let's go away from this room and leave those two alone together. And the uncle's like, what? Why? And she's like, just come with me. And she leaves them together alone in the room. And she takes Tommy with her as well.
Yes.
She drags him out. And then the prince asks her, may I have this dance? And Clara
and then
says,
they dance together.
No, she says, I couldn't say no to the king. And then they dance together. Get it? Get it? Because that's what her aunt said to her. So this is basically, in the end of the movie, Clara, like, becomes an independent, like, woman who has achieved, like, some level of responsibility and, like, adultness, but also still has her ambitions and still lives in, like, an adventurous life. She's still happy with her life and stuff like that. So that was a nice ending, and the ending ends, and we zoom to the snow globe, and there's two people dancing. The Sugar Plum Princess and Prince Eric are dancing in it. And then it's back to the ballet room.
And Barbie and Kelly are finishing up their story.
Yeah, and Kelly's like, I know what the moral of this story is. Be brave and be determined. It's Undertale, actually. The Undertale is the moral of the story. Stay determined. She's basically like, the moral of the story is keep at your dreams, your efforts. Keep struggling with what you're trying to do. And if you're brave enough, you'll eventually overthrow a dictatorial ruler and establish a different type of monarchy with a hopefully benevolent ruler that you will marry and dance with in a pretty dress. That's the moral. I feel like the moral is a bit like thrown off by the fact that the theme itself isn't too prevalent in the entirety of the movie. It basically takes Kelly spelling it out for the audience to realize that's what the moral is.
The moral gets a bit confused in this one.
But I think it's a good movie to like, especially the ending of telling people watching, kids watching, and I guess especially girls watching, keep trying and you'll achieve what you're trying to accomplish. I think that's a good moral to like promote for everyone. So do you want to go down the list of everything?
Well, Jason,
I forgot. So the prince, when he meets Clara, he gives her the locket
that she
and also the owl's eyes glint when they start dancing because it's like it's the aunt watching. Yes, I'm shipping them now. I have power. I'm gonna be able to manipulate the throne now. It's actually a very complex game of thrones, I guess you could say. No, we're gonna get copyrighted. Anyway, so do you want to go down the list?
I think we kind of did as we were going through your synopsis.
We can recap.
I think that I am happy with my delivery of my list, but if you want to go through your list.
No, because you didn't say which the best dress was.
I actually preferred the nightdress.
That Clara wore.
Yeah.
At the start.
It could be because, Jason, I wonder why I liked the nightdress.
Why did you like the nightdress, Mina?
Because I'm wearing my Victorian child nightgown right now.
Elizabeth Bennet? And her sister, what was the sister's name?
Jane?
Jane. And her other sisters, Lizzie and Kitty.
Kitty isn't a sister, is she?
It was Elizabeth, Jane, Mary, Lizzie, and Kitty.
You said Lizzie twice! You said Elizabeth and Lizzie!
I did, didn't I? Okay, there's two very young ones.
It's Kitty and Mary.
No, Mary is the other one. Mary's the one with the glasses that's very boring.
Lydia?
Oh, right. Sorry, her name's Lydia. Sorry.
There we go.
Clearly, my Jane Austen is rusty.
The last time I consumed any Pride and Prejudice media was when I read the first chapter of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies for my fanfiction lecture last year.
Oh my god.
It was okay. It wasn't bad.
Okay, can I go down the list now?
Yes.
Okay, so the voice of Barbie. I mean, I wasn't too jazzed
Kelly Sheridan is a gem and a treasure. And okay, if you trash talk her, I will.
Okay, I'm just going to say the delivery of a lot of the lines in this movie was a bit stale. And I'm not blaming the voice actor. I'm blaming the directors on this one.
There you go.
But again, the end result was eh.
It was middle of the road.
Best song, I've said the Winter Fairies. Snowflake Dance, you've said the Flower Dance. The best dress, Aunt Drosselmeyer, obviously, for me. I really like it. Cuteness of the sidekicks. The fairies were terrifying.
Very scary.
We both agree on that. Marzipan was all right.
Marzipan was pretty cute, yeah.
I would never want to ride a pink horse, though.
It is the dream of every little
girl. Is it?
Girl.
Do you want to ride a pink horse?
As a child?
No, yes. I mean right now.
I mean, I would, if given the chance.
Do you know how to ride a horse?
Jason?
Yeah?
Yes!
Oh. Diversity. I've just written one here. I've just written one on the diversity. Because there is only one person of color in the entire film. Queer coding? None. There isn't any queer coding. I mean, I guess if you want to read Pym as queer, but I wouldn't. Because I don't want to. Sapphic or Achillean, was it? Achillean. Yeah. You said Achillean. Achillean reading. Yeah, there is. There is quite a significant Sapphic and Achillean reading in this film, which probably won't happen with the other films, because Achillean readings and Barbie don't really go hand in hand very often.
No, there's usually... I know that every movie that has two female protagonists often has two male love interests. So same thing here with, like, Princess and the Pauper. Like, you know, that would really be the only time when there are two boys on screen at the same time.
But Princess and the Pauper is, again, one of the most sapphic movies out there.
Like, Princess and the Pauper is going to give us a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that. Accuracy to the original source material. I just put the Lenny face in my notes because I didn't bother reading it. And, moral of the story, be brave, keep trying, and punch fascists, which I think is a good moral.
Smash the fash!
Yeah, bash and smash the fash. So would you recommend this movie, Mina?
I would!
Yeah, I would too. I think it's worth watching. Definitely better than 20% score at Rotten Tomatoes.
I think that it's a delightful movie, you know, if you have to entertain a small child or yourself.
I was entertained by it. Yeah. It's pretty short as well. It's like an hour long.
Yeah, it's like 65 minutes or something. It's very short, yeah. Mm-hmm. For a feature-length film, you know, like...
I think it's very well written in the sense that it's so much foreshadowing. So many elements are foreshadowed.
Yeah, everything is really tied together. It's very it's very harmonious writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of harmony of design in the film.
So that was the show. We're done. There's nothing else to say about this.
My recording right now is at 1 hour 57 minutes.
Yeah, same.
this is going to be so much audio for you to just bog through.
Oh, it's Jason. Fine. I'm used to it. I'm going to stop recording now.
This has
been... Oh, wait, no. Yeah, sorry. I've just forgot. We need to do the outro. I'm just going to stop recording, but... No. Go on, do the outro.
So this has been Put a Shrimp on It.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
I'm Philomena.
And I'm Jason.
Thank you for listening to our fine program.
Thank you for putting up with us.
For 2 hours. Oh,
it's
God.
2 hours now. It's going to be less than 2 hours. It's going to be like 1 hour You're 30
right.
by the end.
You're right. We're going to cut it. We're going to cut it down, but like, I don't know how much. Oh, goodness. Okay.
I'm going to edit it, right? Not you. Because I'm the perfect editor.
You are.
Jason, not true.
You're,
I'm really...
Jason, you're very skilled. You're very skilled at the things that you do.
Have we said bye yet? Did we both say bye? I'm not sure. Bye.